I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Last night in Cleveland, Ohio, 10 GOP presidential candidates were questioned by Fox News anchors Megyn Kelly, Chris Wallace, and Bret Baier for 2 hours. Here's how Bret Baier began the debate.
Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person? Again, we're looking for you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand now if you won't make that pledge tonight. Mr. Trump.
It was a feisty and fast-paced debate that touched on a number of issues, including immigration, education, foreign policy, same-sex marriage, Planned Parenthood, and God. We're going to talk about how the candidates performed and the issues that were and weren't discussed. We have a trio of guests who have joined us. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Dick Pullman, national political columnist at Newsworks, where he writes the National Interest blog. Also full-time writer-in-residence at the Center for Programs and Contemporary Writing, and that's at the University of Pennsylvania. Dick Pullman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
And joining us by telephone is Carl Golden, senior contributing analyst with the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy. That's at Stockton University, also a contributor to NJ Spotlight. He's former press secretary for Republican New Jersey Governors Thomas Kane and Christine Todd Whitman. Carl Golden, it's been a while. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. As well.
Thank you, Marty. Good to be with you.
And nice to have you with us. And joining us from the studios of the Washington Post is Katie Zesma, national political correspondent, has been covering the 26th presidential election for the paper. And Katie Zesma, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Where to start? Let me start with you, Dick Pullman. A lot happened last night. Did this debate live up to all the hype and expectation from your perspective, Dick?
I probably surpassed it by light years. There's so much expectations going into most debates, and most times there's less than you expect. You're disappointed or you're let down. But this one was different, and I think the theater of it. I have to give Fox News props on one particular aspect of that, which is the questioning. Obviously, you have this big arena, and so you have this electricity. They know how to stage things. But also, I think more importantly, for those of us who often goof on Fox News as being sort of in the ideological bubble, I thought most of the questions were well-crafted and tough. And, they were just like – they were really pointed political questions honing in on, I think, what were in some ways the vulnerabilities of almost everybody on that stage. Some had tougher questions than others. But I thought that elevated things. And the opening question, the clip you just played, taking that question to Trump, basically, about whether you're going to support the eventual nominee. I mean, that is the overriding issue right now, given the polls. And so it brought out, it made news. It made news in the first 2 minutes. And
it's a good way to start a debate.
That.
Yeah. Katie, what was your takeaway from last night?
Well, it was definitely raucous, given what was going on. One of my colleagues wrote that Mr. Trump landed like a grenade on stage. There were points that were good, and they really revolved around Mr. Trump.
And to you, Carl Golden, I'm curious about your perspective as well. Having worked for a couple of Republican governors in New Jersey, what did you see last night?
Well, I'm tempted to say there were 10 candidates who finished in a tie for second place. By that, I mean, I don't think anyone walked away from it having changed anyone's minds or having convinced undecided people to move over into a decided column and select a candidate. I think each person went in there with a goal in mind, with an agenda, which was obviously not to say something that was going to be all over the papers this morning that made him look embarrassed or whatever. And I think they all did that. I think with respect to Mr. Trump, I think the answer to is the very first question about whether he'd support the eventual nominee if it's not him, and pledge not to run as a third party candidate. I think that hurt him. And I think that it's going to continue to hurt him, and I think you're going to see Mr. Trump's star descending a little bit after that.
And hurt him, do you think, among the party elders or among his supporters, do you think, Carl? And then it looks like Dick wants to add something.
Oh, I think his supporters will stay with him no matter what, but I think it hurt him among the party elders. There are an awful lot of people who still remember 1992 and Ross Perot siphoning off almost 20% of the vote and essentially, according to some anyway, electing Bill Clinton president. And I think it's sort of the first question could have been, you know, who up on the stage wants to be the sore loser? And I think Donald Trump raised his hand.
What do you think, Doug? I mean, do you see this as a kind of disloyalty to the Republican Party? And at one point, Megyn Kelly did ask him, when did you become a Republican? And clearly, he's not your typical Republican candidate. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that's what's so interesting about him. He's, you know, the party has generally respected and enforced loyalty and hierarchy. And Carl just mentioned the party elders. I agree. I mean, the party elders got to look at that. And I've already seen some stories on Politico today saying, you know, they thought that the debate was a disaster for Trump. But among the people who are supporting him and the sizable number, I guess, by the polls, you know, their whole take is that they like him because he's precisely not a party elder, not a party regular, not party establishment. And he makes his own rules. You know, he shrugs off things that, you know, if you had asked any other candidate on that stage, you know, how can you defend calling women, you know, fat pigs, et cetera, you know, I don't know, you know, they would implode within seconds or they never would have gotten to the stage. And he just shrugs it off and says, well, your problem is everybody else is too politically correct. And so the question really is, how long can he make his own rules? How long will people tolerate him in the party making his own rules? Can he actually ride that all the way to the convention? I don't know the answer to that, but you know, I suspect not. But
Katie, and I do want to play that clip where Megyn Kelly does ask Donald Trump about some of the comments that he has made about women. But Katie, how do you see his supporters? What is his appeal, you think, to those people that are so enamored of Donald Trump?
I think exactly what he said, which is that he's not a politician and he plays his card. And as, you know, Governor Kasich said, he's tapped into something, whether, you know, people don't like the establishment. And as Senator Cruz said as well, you know, it's not people who hate the government. You know, he's just really played into something.
Well, and the question is, I guess, what that something is. Do you have any idea of that, Katie?
Yeah, I think it's the establishment. People want someone who is going to say what they think, who's not a polished politician, and people feel that they've found that in Trump.
Let me play that another clip, and this is from the debate last night, and this is when a moderator, Megyn Kelly, does confront Donald Trump about some of the comments he has made about women. Let's give it a listen.
Mr. Trump, one of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides, in particular when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account
only
is
Rosie
several...
O'Donnell.
No, it wasn't.
Thank you.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
I think the big problem this country has is being politically correct. I've been...
And Donald Trump goes on from there. Carl Golden, I was trying to imagine if I was in the audience, I'd never heard of Donald Trump. I decided to tune into the debate last night to try to figure out who this guy was, what my first impression of this candidate, Donald Trump, would be. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think I one of your other guests said it earlier. There's a feeling in the country that political correctness has pretty much run amok, and that people running for public office are bowing to that and are pandering to that, and there's a backlash brewing against that sort of thing, and that's what Donald Trump has tapped into. I think his comments, if they are indeed accurate, and I assume that they are, about women are you know, pretty disgusting. But he shrugs it off. He barrels ahead and says, you know, yeah, I said all those things, but, you know, I'm not politically correct, and I am what I am.
Well, and I have to say, read a couple of tweets from Donald Trump. He says, wow, at Megyn Kelly really bombed tonight. People are going wild on Twitter, funny to watch. Probably someone tweeting for him. I really enjoyed the debate tonight, even though the at Fox News trio, especially at Megyn Kelly, was not very good or professional. Dick, do you want to weigh in on this as well?
Two things. The Republican National Committee put out a report. They did an autopsy on the 2012 election, and it came out a year later. And one of the first things they said in there was that if we're ever going to win a presidential election in the foreseeable future, we have got to connect more with, among others, women. And, you know, I think it's problematical that if you have a front runner for the nomination who's shrugging off those kinds of comments and those kinds of attitudes, you know, I question how far they're going to get. Whether enough people in the party, enough grassroots voters are actually going to decide, okay, it's Iowa, it's January of 2016, let's get serious. We'll see about that. I mean, that's what's going to tell about him. The second thing I just want to mention to your question, Marty, is is he right in saying that Megyn Kelly picked on him? I think probably if you looked at the questions last night, they were tough on most of the people. But I think what I was saying before, that they were tougher on some than others. I think they were tougher on Trump because, you know, whether this is a Fox News conspiracy or not, you know, Fox News is one of the gatekeepers for the Republican Party. And they probably have their own concerns, or Roger Ailes, the chairman, has his own concerns about how electable someone like Donald Trump would be. So, you know, I think putting those questions to him and testing him, not that they wanted him to necessarily fail, but I think because he's so new and people are just sort of dazzled by the celebrity, they want to try to pin him down, and that's only fair. And, you know, he's a front runner. Of course, you know, him using the media as a foil, you know, that also appeals to a lot of the people who like him.
Katie, we're almost up in a break here, and there's a lot of speculation about, you know, just how deep the support for Donald Trump is and whether he's reached this ceiling or not. Any way to know that?
I think it remains to be seen. You know, it's still very early on in the process. He's had this huge bump in the polls. And now I think after this, we've seen him on the national stage. Now we're going to wait and see if this can be sustained.
And that's Katie Zesma. And she's national political correspondent for the Washington Post, has been covering the 26th presidential election. Joining us along with Carl Golden, he's a senior contributing analyst with the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy at Stockton University, also a contributor to New Jersey Spotlight. And also with us is Dick Pohlman, national political columnist at WHYY's Newsworks, where he writes the National Interest blog, talking about last night's debate among the 10 GOP candidates hosted by Fox. We're going to take a very short break, and we're going to move on beyond Donald Trump. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we're talking about what a lot of people are talking about this morning, which was last night's candidate debate in Cleveland, Ohio, the first debate of the 2016 presidential race, and the top 10 GOP candidates were there. Talking with Carl Golden, Katie Zesma, and Dick Pohlman. And again, you can join our conversation as well by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Carl, you've been press secretary for two Republican governors in New Jersey, Thomas Kane and Christine Todd Whitman. How do you think Governor Christie did in the debate last night?
I think he did what I think was expected. He's still in the mix, certainly. He's at the low on the lower tier, according to the polls. He barely made the debate, but he went into it with, I suspect, a goal of showing he belongs on the stage with the others, showing that he can master at least some of the others. And I think his candidacy is sort of in neutral after last night's debate, but he's still there. He's still in the game. He's still suited up, and he's still on the field. So That, I think, was what he wanted to do going in, and I think he accomplished that.
Dick, it was interesting. No questions about Bridgegate, as it's called. I don't know if that was, you know, the place to do it or not. Mm-hmm. How did you see Christie performing last night?
Well, I pretty much agree with what Carl just said. He was lucky not to get the Bridgegate question, because some of those questions, like we were saying, were so pointed, and he could easily have gotten a question that said, given the fact that two of your senior aides have been indicted in this scandal and that the federal investigation is ongoing, has this put a damper on your candidacy, and do you fear it going forward? And, of course, he would say no, and he would you know, push off from that. But still, it would have opened it up again and reminded people. I think he's got two problems, I think. I mean, one is I think he's squeezed on one end by Trump in a way, because he was sort of like the tell it like it is, blustery, you know, authentic so-called candidate until Trump came along and trumped him. And on the other end, he's been a little bit squeezed by the fact that now there are some governors in the race, and I'm thinking John Kasich in particular, who have better records. You know, better economic records, you know, more to brag about in terms of their tenure. You know, won re-election by as much or more than he did. Oh, and Ohio is a swing state. No Republican's ever been elected without winning Ohio. And Kasich, I thought, did pretty well last night in a number of respects. And so he's got some problems, you know, on both ends. You know, I thought the fight he picked with Rand Paul, I guess we're going to talk about that.
There was a
fight with Rand Paul over terrorism versus civil liberties. And I thought he did, you know, I thought he did pretty well with that. And it was good video.
But it's also very good audio. It works on the radio as well.
We'll find out. But, you know, I think he's just kind of like, you know, swimming in place. Nothing more.
And I do want to play that clip, but to you, Katie, and just at one point, Rand Paul and Chris Christie get into a pretty heated and maybe the most substantive debate of last night on civil liberties, on surveillance, the Patriot Act. How did you see this back and forth?
I saw this as something that's actually been brewing for a while. When Senator Paul took to the Senate floor for an almost 11-hour speech, you know, against the NSA and against, you know, domestic spying, Governor Christie took it to him through a statement and said that, you know, assailed him for doing it and said that he was putting security at risk. So they've been going back and forth on this for a while, and I think it all kind of came to a head on the debate stage last night.
Well, that's a perfect setup for this clip we're going to play. We had to winnow it down. It's about a minute and a half here. And again, this is Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie in a dispute over things like the bulk collection of data about surveillance, about civil liberties. Let's give it a listen.
I want to collect more records from terrorists, but less records from innocent Americans. The Fourth Amendment was what we fought the revolution over. John Adams said it was the spark that led to our war for independence. And I'm proud of standing for the Bill of Rights, and I will continue to stand for the Bill of Rights.
And Megan, that's a completely ridiculous answer. I want to collect more records from terrorists, but less records from other people. How are you supposed to know, Megan?
Use the Fourth Amendment.
How are you supposed
to? Use the Fourth Amendment.
No, I'll tell you how you
get a warrant.
Let me tell you something.
Get a judge to sign a warrant.
Senator.
Go ahead, wait, Governor Christie, make your point.
Listen, Senator, you know, when you're sitting in a subcommittee just blowing hot air about this, you can say things like that. When you're responsible for protecting the lives of the American people, then what you need to do is to make sure that you use the system the way it's supposed to work. Here's the problem, Governor.
You fundamentally misunderstand the Bill of Rights. Every time you did a case, you got a warrant from a judge. I'm talking about searches without warrants, indiscriminately of all Americans' records, and that's what I fought to end. I don't trust President Obama with our records. I know you gave him a big hug, and if you want to give him a big hug again, go right ahead.
Go ahead, Governor.
Senator Paul, you know, the hugs that I remember are the hugs that I gave to the families who lost their people on September 11th. Those are the hugs I remember.
Carl, what do you make of that back and forth?
At first, it was an argument that's never going to be settled between the two. They are both so locked into their respective positions. But it was interesting to me that it gave Senator Paul the opportunity to take a jab at Christie over something that evidently still rankles a great many Republicans, which was his welcome of President Obama. I don't think he actually gave him a hug, but there was sort of a bit of a rhetorical hug. And I still see people and I still hear people and talk to people who say that that was a major blunder on his part, and they're not going to forget it. And it was a shot at, in many ways, at Mitt Romney. And it gave Rand Paul the opportunity to make that case or to make that point. And that's bothersome to Christie. I think it still bothers him, and it still bothers a lot of people, particularly the more conservative folks in the party are very much bothered by that.
You know, Dick, and that was just an excerpt of that back and forth. And as I was watching it and listening to it, I thought, no, that's a debate. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a debate about serious issues, about civil liberties, about surveillance, about data collection. Mm-hmm. That's a real debate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the things in debates, and this was, by the way, totally absent from the 5 o'clock debate with the undercard there, was, there was no back and forth. You know, you don't often see enough of that in debates. You know, it's generally, you know, they stand there at podiums and they're doing sort of, you know, parallel speeches. But, you know, I mean, I welcome that just for on two levels. One was the fact that they were able to engage directly, but also it's a fundamental, you know, I don't want to say a schism, but it's a fundamental divide within the Republican Party here about, you know, it's sort of libertarian civil liberties and privacy, Christie was talking about, you know, we've got to go after people wherever we can in whatever way we can. And, that's actually one of the interesting things I think that I'd like to hear more of now.
Sure.
In the next 6 months.
Sure. Katie, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, you know, I think that it is, we did really get to see them going back and forth. And as Carl said, you know, these are two men who are both really dug into their positions on this. You know, Governor Christie has long called for more protections against terrorism, and Senator Paul, you know, took to the Senate floor for 11 hours after going to Philadelphia to give a speech that was very rife with symbolism about the Fourth Amendment. So, I would expect to see more of this out of these two.
And we're talking about last night's debate, 10 GOP candidates facing off in Cleveland, Ohio, the first of what will probably be a lot more debates for the 2016 presidential race. And that's Katie Zesma. She's national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Also with us, Carl Golden, senior contributing analyst with the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy at Stockton University in New Jersey. And he was the press secretary for two Republican New Jersey governors, Thomas Kane and Christine Todd Whitman. And Dick Pullman with us, national political columnist at Newsworks here at WHYY. He writes the National Interest blog. And we are talking about last night's debate, and we want to talk with you as well. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I want to put someone else's name on the table for our discussion. And perhaps, Dick, I'll begin with you, and this is Jeb Bush, who has been described as the sort of inevitable candidate who will be taking on whoever wins the Democratic primary. After last night's debate, did he seem so inevitable to you?
That's funny that you brought him up, because I was just writing on my pad, we haven't talked about Jeb. Here's the guy. This was the establishment's best hope, right? He's raised a ton of money from the usual, you know, establishment suspects. His super PAC is, you know, trumping everybody else. Sorry on the word Trump there.
Yeah, it's hard to avoid.
You know, and so everybody is, but he just, and he's standing next to Trump, and I couldn't help thinking while I was watching him that he was just thinking, you know, my life was fine the way it was. How did I end up on a stage in Cleveland standing next to this guy? And the problem is, you know, what does he do? He doesn't want to engage Trump on everything, because then it just looks like, Trump's controlling the debate. But by the same token, he doesn't want to necessarily ignore him either. And yet he did ignore him a few times, which I thought necessarily didn't help him. You know, Trump did a real number on him about his brother in Iraq, and saying, Trump said, I was against the war in 2004. It was already destabilizing the Middle East. Now, that was quite a slap at his brother's tenure. Jeb let it go. You know, and there's just a lot of times where he just doesn't seem very comfortable up there. Hmm. You know, I think he's got less charisma than his brother, make of that what you will. I thought he spent a lot of time, maybe too much time, touting his Florida economic record, which was like 10 years ago. I don't know how many people care about that. He was saying he created, you know, X millions of jobs. There was a housing bubble at the time that coincided with his administration, you know, within 3 years of him leaving office, almost all those jobs were gone because the housing bubble burst. You know, I don't know how many people are going to care about hearing his old record. So I don't think he really, you know, I don't think he really got much traction out of that debate.
And what did you see last night, Carl, as you watched Jeb Bush?
Unfortunately, I think it's his personality, but he comes across almost as disengaged. I mean, he clearly is conversant with the issues, and I think it's inevitable that he was going to talk about his record in Florida. He's been out of office for 8 years, I guess, now, and so he has a record to fall back on, although, as Dick points out, it's almost a decade old now. But I just think that he is what he is, and he's not about to change his personality. He's not about to become Donald Trump. He's not about to become Chris Christie. And I think I might disagree with Dick a little bit here. I think to engage Trump directly would have been a mistake, whether it had to do with Iraq and his brother or whatever. I think you had to acknowledge his presence. You had to acknowledge the fact that Trump was at behind podium number one. But at the same time, I think he would have not served himself well if he'd gotten into the kind of back and forth that Christie got into with Rand Paul, for example.
Well, that's interesting. And Katie, what Jeb Bush said is perhaps a higher bar for me because my brother and my father have both been presidents of the United States. Is that his bag of woe?
Well, yeah, he said it before, but it seemed, you know, he was kind of stilted, but he was consistent. He was cautious. He didn't really have a breakout moment, but he also didn't really stumble. So it was kind of he was status quo there for quite some time.
Let me read a couple of emails. JT says, I heard the Nielsen rating was 14.8. Do your guests think more people tune in primarily for entertainment purposes? If it was more for entertainment, do you think that is a problem for the GOP? Carl, can I put that to you? I guess 14.8 is probably pretty good, especially for a debate. Do you think it was for entertainment? And is that a bad thing?
No, I don't think it's a bad thing. We've come a long way since 1960, the Kennedy-Nixon debates, which were obviously a whole lot more substantive. So I think a lot of people tuned in because Trump got them to tune in many ways, and that it was their first opportunity to see people, to see these 10 people head-to-head and going at one another. And I think that there's always been an entertainment value to politics. So I think a lot of people tuned in for the entertainment. People who tuned in to hear a substantive debate probably made a mistake because I don't think it was terribly substantive.
And is that just because it's hard to do that under a format? You've got 10 people on the stage that you just can't get deep into policy?
Yeah, I think the format was just a bit unwieldy with so many folks up there. In fact, Dr. Carson, I think at one point said, geez, I didn't think anybody was going to ask me a question. So it was just a little unwieldy. People standing there, in essence, twiddling their thumbs while waiting for two or three or four or five other people to answer a question. So I would, you know, make a suggestion to Fox News that if I could do this again, to do two nights or three nights and, you know, cut the number of participants down, I think would give more substance to the debates and would give more of an opportunity for the kind of back and forth that Dick talked about earlier that really did stand out in that debate.
Did you want to add something, Dick?
Yeah, just quickly. One of the problems, I think, is that, you know, you have more candidates than ever before. I was at 17 between the two debates. And I don't know, I wrote something about this a few weeks ago. It's just a function of the times we live in. You know, I mean, there was a time, I don't want to sound 100 years old here, but, you know, where party elders really, you know, they ruled the roost, you know, and they could knock heads together and they could say to someone like Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio, hey, it's not your time yet. Hold on. Hang on. You know, let's get some people who are, you know, a little bit more seasoned and electable. So you cut down the number of people. But now because of Citizens United and super PACs and all the rest of it and individual moguls who can keep candidates going all by themselves, you know, everybody's an individual entrepreneur. And so it's just much, you know, and it's an open race anyway. It's an open seat. So, you know, that's augmenting, I think, the problem that the network in some ways is trying to deal with.
We have a tweet from Nate. Carl mentioned Dr. Carson, and Nate tweets, Dr. Carson's platform is basically, I'm intelligent, so I can be president. He seemed very nervous. He's clearly not ready. And, I mean, he's an interesting candidate in this debate in that he truly is a greenhorn when it comes to election politics.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it seems based on some of the things that we've seen on the internet that he seemed to get a lot of traction last night. You know, people searching for him and people looking for him. But, you know, he had a very good end of the debate when he talked about his time as a neurosurgeon. He said, you know, I'm the only person up here who's separated Siamese twins. And he talked about, you know, race and the brain being, you know, the core of a person. And then that's what he does is operate on brains. So, you know, he is the real, you know, political neophyte. But he did seem to, you know, get a lot of people interested in him based on what we've seen online.
Well, that's interesting. And, Dick, I have to say, I mean, clearly he's a very gifted surgeon, but I have to say some of the answers that he gave to some of the questions, I truly didn't understand what he was saying.
Yeah. No, I felt
badly about that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I think in some ways I think the format, kind of, you know, you're sitting there for half an hour waiting to come around to you. And if you don't have a lot of experience, you know, I mean, it's a mental adjustment to have to sit and wait. And then you have to try to articulate. You only have that time to hit the mark. And, you know, but he also got lucky in some respects, too, because he didn't get a question such as, you know, please explain to us why it was that you called President Obama psychotic. You know, you know, stuff like that. I mean, maybe that wouldn't come from Fox News, but, you know, it could have been even tougher for him. And, you know, I think, frankly, they'd be better off. The party would be better off if they can somehow you know, coax him off the stage at these big events and replace him with Carly Fiorina, who I thought did very well.
She did the 5 o'clock debate,
Yes, in the 5 o'clock debate. And I think they'd benefit by having her up there, frankly.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about last night's debate on Fox. 10 GOP candidates facing off in Cleveland, Ohio. The first of what will be probably a lot or certainly many more debates for the 2016 presidential race. The voice you just heard is Dick Pullman, national political columnist at WHYY's Newsworks. He writes the National Interest blog. Also with us and joining us by telephone, Carl Golden, senior contributing analyst at Stockton University, also a contributor to New Jersey Spotlight. And he's was the press secretary for two New Jersey Republican governors, Christine Todd Whitman and Thomas Kane. And also with us, Katie Zesma, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, covering the 2016 presidential election. Join us. Call us. In fact, we'll talk some more with our emailers at radiotimes@whyy.org and call us at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with our three guests. We all stayed up late last night watching the GOP debate. Katie Zesma, Carl Golden, and Dick Pullman. And you can join our conversation, especially if you stayed up late like us, and call us at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Steve from Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. So I want to ask the guests about the question that there wasn't one question that had to do with from the moderators that had to do with climate change
and the environment
and the environment and is that just totally off the Republican radar? I mean, why was that left out? It seems to be one of the most important questions of our times.
Well, you know what, Steve? It looks like Dick Pullman wants to answer your question. I'd be curious what our other guests have to say.
Nodding vigorously.
You were. I mean, you have a slight advantage in that I'm looking at you. Go
well,
ahead, Dick.
Yeah, I mean, I thought of that at the time, wrote something down about that, you know, this whole thing, you know, a show of hands, you know, who here is going to not support the candidate? You could easily have a show of hands, who here does not believe that humans cause climate change and that it's real, or some, you know, construction like that. And, you know, maybe the answer to the caller's question is that maybe it's just within the Republican Party right now, it's just a given that they all question the reality of climate change. There's no reason to ask. I thought Marco Rubio got off a little bit easy where, you know, there was a couple years ago, there was some interview where he was asked how old the Earth was and, mm-hmm. you know, is it 6,000 years old? You know, it's that kind of a thing. And he said he didn't know and I'm not a scientist and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, it would have been nice to see him pressed on something like that. I mean, if you look at the polls, I mean, it's the mainstream position that climate change is serious and that it's real. And, you know, so really the question to ask is, because it's serious and real, what are we going to do about it? But we didn't even get to that point in the debate. And so I thought that was, at least for the edification of the viewer, a lost opportunity.
Mm. Katie, do you think there was anything else that wasn't asked last night? I mean, there are so many things that could be asked. Do you think there were any major omissions?
There really was not a lot of talk about the economy. You know, there's a lot of foreign policy talk. There was a lot of talk about other subjects, but there really was not a ton of talk about the economy.
And Carl, I don't know if you're still a Republican, but you have, you know, certainly worked with two Republicans. I would say, you know, moderates, both Christine Todd Whitman and Thomas Kane. Does the Republican Party have a problem within the party, not just about a diversity of opinion, but that it seems to attract a certain kind of candidate?
I'm not sure what you mean by a certain kind of candidate.
Well, we spent a lot of time talking about one of them, Donald Trump. But
well, one of the issues or one of the areas that was not asked about either, or at least I think it was referenced only in passing, was the state of race relations in the country, which is always ranks fairly high on issues of concern. And I believe that right toward the end of the debate, I believe the question was posed a little bit to Dr. Carson. But I would have been anxious to hear some of the candidates on that issue as well. But the number of candidates, as Dick points out, with that are in this race, I mean, there's an awful lot of sort of why not me candidates, mm-hmm. where you look in the mirror in the morning and say, well, why not me? I have access to money. I have access to a certain core of support. And, who is going to stand up, whether it's a national chairman, say, no, you can't run or whatever. Again, in the old days, and I don't know how far back Dick goes, but, you had party leaders who basically, whose word was law, and who basically said, look, it's not your time, and you're out. That's not the case anymore. So the candidates being attracted on either side, frankly, Democrat or Republican, are really not under any sort of outside control or outside influence anymore. They're their own people, raising their own money and gathering their own support. So the type of candidates who show up, run from left to right, and there's not much you can do about that.
Well, Carl, as you were talking, I was thinking about Ted Cruz calling the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, member of his own party, basically a liar on the Senate floor, apparently really breaking with decorum and with format. I don't know if that's a good example of what you're talking about.
Well, it is, and Senator Cruz has done similar things in the past, but the fact of the matter is that it's become much more individualized than it has been party-controlled and party-oriented. At the end of the day, of these 17, there's at least, 10 or maybe even more who really have no realistic hope of becoming a nominee. But they're there, they're on TV, the media follows them around, and they keep feeding off that, and so they're not going to get out. As long as the money keeps flowing, they're not going to get out.
Well, and apparently Senator Bernie Sanders talked about some omissions last night, including income and wealth inequality, climate change, as we mentioned, Citizens United, student debt. So, I mean, there is a long list of things that were not talked about.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Well, I'd add one more. It's actually related to the race relations or voting rights and, you know, the whole
50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act.
50th anniversary of voting
yesterday.
Would have been a perfect time to talk about that and to basically ask. I would, you know, it'd be great if CNN on September 16th, the next debate, asks this question. You know, what actual evidence do Republicans have that voter ID laws, for example, photo ID laws, are necessary to combat voter impersonation fraud at the ballot box, when there have been actually a number of studies, and I've written about them in my column, that have said that there is no such thing as widespread voter impersonation fraud nationwide in Pennsylvania or anywhere else. But, you know, they're pushing it in all these different states. There's a trial going on right now in North Carolina that's going to be really, really important. Republican governor, Republican legislature. And so this has become a big cause celeb for Republicans. You know, I would love to have heard, see if there was any kind of a daylight between any of these candidates on that.
We have an email from Margaret. She says, are you going to discuss what she calls as the cocktail hour debate? I've heard it talked about as the kids' table. That's not very nice. Did any of those seven do well enough to deserve to move to the main stage? And Katie Dick had mentioned Carly Fiorina. I'm assuming you watched the 5 o'clock debate. Anything jump out at you?
Yeah, you know, she seemed to do quite well. I mean, I believe it was Governor Perry who said he'd rather have Carly Fiorina going up against Hillary Clinton than some others. You know, she was the one who really seemed to break out from that debate, and it'll be interesting to see where it gets her.
Yeah, Carl, do you have any sense of that?
I think she did extremely well. I think it's a bit of a shame and a disservice to refer to that group of seven as, you know, the JV team or the kids' table and whatever. But again, you've got this problem of 17 candidates. Somehow you've got to draw lines so the thing doesn't get totally out of hand. And whether that's, you know, more debates, fewer people, however you're going to do it, I would lean toward more debates and fewer people, because I think it will lead to much more substantive debates, much more substantive issues, much more substantive proposals, and not just, you know, 30 seconds worth of soundbite.
Well, I know some Democrats, I think even Bernie Sanders, complaining that there aren't enough debates when it comes to the Republican candidates. Dick, I'm looking at you. While there are many candidates running in the Republican Party, of course, many fewer running in the Democratic Party, and it seems in a much very tightly controlled, if I can say. I think there's something like 4 debates, something like that, which is not a lot of debates.
Right, yeah. I'd like to see, I mean, I think that there's an opportunity on the Democratic side to have, I mentioned, you know, inequality, income inequality, the economy, the structure of the economy, corporate wealth, all the stuff that Bernie Sanders is frankly putting on the table right now, and that Hillary is being forced in some ways to tilt leftward on, in some ways, at least rhetorically, tone-wise. You know, there's all kinds of fruitful opportunity there for issue distinction. I don't know if Martin O'Malley is going to get any traction, the former governor of Maryland. Of course, there's ongoing buzz all week long, some of it perhaps meaningless, about Joe Biden and whether he would get in or not, or position himself in case Hillary continues to flatline a little bit in the polls. But, you know, these are two open races, and the worst thing that the Democrats could do is get tagged as the party of coronation.
Mm, indeed. Let's talk a bit about John Kasich, and he was the kind of a surprise, I guess, entrance into this debate, was able to make it to the evening debate last night. Carl, how do you see him? And he's, of course, the governor of Ohio. Sounds like he had a lot of, you know, supporters and fans in the audience there, some hometown advantage.
Yeah, he was criticized initially for waiting so long to get in, but it didn't seem to hurt him. He got in, and within 3 weeks, he had leapfrogged some other candidates who had been in, obviously, longer than he. And I think he did well. He referred to his record in Ohio, which was obviously a lot more recent than Jeb Bush referring to his in Florida. And he does have quite a story to tell in Ohio. And as Dick pointed out earlier, Ohio is an incredibly key state for Republicans. I think he did well. And again, he did what he had to do, which was show he belongs there. And I think there'll be a lot of people who are now convinced that he is in the top, you know, 3, 4, 5 people. He did what he set out to do.
And Katie was asked about same-sex marriage. Had an interesting and very personal response to that question.
Yeah, he did. He did. He said he would, you know, love his, you know, you can be opposed to, opposed to same-sex marriage, but still love people who are, who are gay or lesbian. And, you know, said he would do the same with his daughters, and talked about, going to a same-sex wedding. So it was quite an interesting answer, where he, you know, took the, you know, position of being, you know, not for it, but supporting people.
But supporting people that were gay or lesbian.
Exactly.
Yeah, Dick, your thoughts?
And you know, he also said something interesting about drug tests as well. He talked a bit about Medicaid expansion. And, you know, Ohio has had a massive heroin problem, an addiction problem. And it's something that we've been seeing bubbling up on the campaign trail quite a bit. Hillary Clinton's been talking about it. Rand Paul's been talking about it. And he's been talking about it as well. And it was just interesting to see that, come up in a debate.
And Dick, you seem more like a general election candidate perhaps in a primary election candidate for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know, one of the things he did I thought was really interesting was he invoked God twice, specifically, but in ways that Republicans, at least lately, have not normally done. You know, when Mike Huckabee or someone on the right invokes God, you kind of know where it's going to go. But he was using God, invoking God to defend his approach to social justice.
The St. Peter's question, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Obamacare expansion in Medicaid and using that in Ohio. And so using God, everybody has a sort of a God-given right to get themselves to the fullest level of their best welfare. I don't mean I mean welfare in the sense of their health.
Well-being.
Well-being. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And the other one was using God to – it was on the gay marriage question. And so he's invoking God as in the theme of tolerance and, you know, how we need to be tolerant. You know, I may not agree with gay marriage, but the court has spoken. It's the law of the land, which he got in there, as opposed to say what Santorum was saying in the other debate. And so he's going to love his daughters and love his friends. And so he's using God as a tolerance theme. And that's one of the things that the Republican National Committee report in 2013 was talking about, is that the party needs to exude more of a tone of tolerance. And so I thought that was an interesting way of using the word that I think Republicans are very much, you know, tuned into, but in a way that they don't normally hear.
You know, Carl, we've talked about most of the candidates, not really Mike Huckabee, not really Ted Cruz, a little bit about Rand Paul, almost nothing about Scott Walker. Is that our mistake? Do you think they did better, or were they somehow forgotten in all the back and forth of last night?
Well, I don't know if they were forgotten. I don't think that Mike Huckabee and Ted Cruz, for example, they're sort of stuck in neutral. They're not climbing. There was no breakout moment by anybody, but if folks needed one, it was people like Cruz and like Huckabee and like Dr. Carson and like Scott Walker. And at the end of the night, everyone, I don't think, made a point to say, you know, I now stand out. I mean, I realize Donald Trump's PR firm cranked out a press release saying, you know, I scored a great victory last night. People don't really sort of pay much attention to that. So I think they kind of all stayed in neutral. And it's a little difficult when you're sharing a stage with some brash and blunt, forceful personalities to stand out like that. So the fact is that they're still there. They're not going to go anywhere in terms of leaving the race. But I don't think they're really going to make much headway as this rolls out.
I'm going to ask a question I don't even really like very much, but I'll put it to you, Dick. Was there a winner last night? Sorry.
I was struggling with that this morning and whether I even wanted to write anything about that. I would say if I had to pick somebody, I would say Kasich was the winner because, he just snuck under the debate. People don't know a lot about him. I thought he introduced himself well. I thought he was forceful and eloquent enough. And I thought he was doing some interesting things like I was saying before. So I would name him.
How about for you, Katie? Are you in the position to even pick winners or losers?
Well, yeah. Not. I mean, I think, you know, Kasich did do well. Rubio had some interesting points. Walker had a line that, that people were talking about, which is that the Russia and China know more about, Hillary Clinton's email through cyber warfare. Right. There were some strong performances.
Well, on that note, we do have to end our conversation. Katie Zesma, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome. National political correspondent for The Washington Post, and she is covering the 2016 presidential election. Carl Golden, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty. My pleasure.
And he's senior contributing analyst with the William J. Hughes Center for Public Policy. That's at Stockton University in New Jersey, a contributor to New Jersey Spotlight. And Dick Pullman, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thanks again, Marty.
You're welcome. And he's national political columnist at WHYY's Newsworks. He writes the National Interest blog. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to find us on Facebook, how to follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.